Colin Matthews was a teenager who was in terrible trouble. As far back as he could remember, his father would drink a lot in the evenings and would often find something wrong with Colin and frequently would end up beating his son. His mother also would drink, and her habit was to stand in the corner and cry and beg his father not to hit him, but basically do nothing more about it. By the time Colin was 10 years old, he learned how to steal from a store. It helped his rage, you know, because he had this huge rage. And when he stole something, it felt to him like he was taking what he deserved, because the world did not treat him the way it should, so why shouldn't he take what he wanted? And after he stole, just for a moment, he felt a sense of release, because they, whoever they was, deserved it. Over the next 6 years, Colin continued to steal, to beat people up, and he was arrested 3 times. When he was 16 years old, he managed to steal some impressive equipment from a hardware store. And he got away with the whole thing, except he made the mistake of bragging about it at school. And there was a boy in Colin's class whose name was Philip. Philip decided that he needed to tell the teachers what Colin had done. And of course, the teachers called the police. When Colin realized that this skinny, nerdly kid in his class had ratted on him, his rage exploded again. And he saw Philip after school that day, and he jumped on him and started beating that kid. He hit Philip's head into the pavement over and over again until Philip was unconscious. And some of the teachers had to pull Colin off. He was still hitting him. Now, at the time, Colin was living in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and they had 2 real paths for juvenile justice. One was the normal incarceration, but they also had this Native American community that would do what they called a circle of justice. And Colin could apply for this process and ask the elders of the tribe how they could hold him accountable for his actions. And so, of course, Colin did not want to go to jail. He hated prison. And, of course, he didn't feel that he deserved any of it. So he appealed to the elders. And they met and they discussed Colin's case. And they met with his parents and they recognized the alcoholism and the violence in the whole system. And they decided that they wanted to try to send Colin to a small island off the coast of Alaska, that instead of putting him in a jail cell, they would put him on this island, they built him a little cabin, and every week or so, they would bring some supplies, and Colin would have to survive by himself in nature. And maybe, just maybe, he might learn something. So Colin found himself in handcuffs in a boat going out to some random frigid island off the coast of Alaska, and he was so angry that after the elders dropped him off with his supplies, he proceeded to get out the matches and burn down the entire cabin. Stupid kid. He then tried to swim from the island back to the mainland. Didn't work. He then proceeded to try to attack the one bear that lived on the island with him. And when they came the next week bringing his supplies, he had to be medevaced out to a hospital where he was there for a month because the bear had broken all kinds of ribs and his leg. But the elders sent him back. And gradually over time, Colin realized that when he hurt something, he ended up paying for it himself. That if he was stupid enough to attack the bear was going to attack him back, and he didn't want that. And gradually, very gradually, Colin began to find some peace. And the elders suggested that every morning he take this heavy, heavy rock and walk up a mountain with the rock and then drop the rock and let it fall down the mountain. And the rock was supposed to be a symbol for his rage and his anger. And every day he would do this. And as the months passed, Colin started becoming a decent human being. He said thank you when they dropped off the supplies. He asked them about what was going on in the world. About 8 months into his life on this island, the elders informed him that Philip, who he had beaten so severely, had been in the ICU for over a month, and his fine motor skills were affected because of what Colin had done to him, that he couldn't walk right. And they told him that Philip had tried to kill himself, not once or twice, but 3 times. And gradually, Colin began to realize that just being a decent human being wasn't going to be enough. That he had to somehow find a way to help Philip heal. And not only Philip, but other people as well. Colin suggested to the elders that they ask Philip's parents if Philip could join him on the island. Well, of course, Philip's parents were not very excited about that idea. But by this time, they had gotten desperate, and they didn't know what else to do, and their son didn't want to live. So they agreed with the caveat that another elder stay with them at all times, a very big man who could stop anything from going on physically between the two boys. When Philip got to the island, not only did he refuse to speak to Colin, but he would frequently burn his food, try to hit him, or do other things to hurt him. And this went on for a while. But gradually, very gradually, Philip began to join Colin in walking up the mountain every day with the big heavy rock and dropping it back down the mountain. And gradually, very gradually, he began to help with some of the chores. And Colin realized that watching Philip get better made him get better. And one night around the fire, Colin looked at the elder. And he finally kind of woke up and said, "You know, I've never asked you before, but why are you here? Why are you on this freezing island with 2 teenage boys? Why do you do this?" And the elder said, "You know, I've learned a powerful lesson, Colin, and I hope that you too are just beginning to learn it. And that is that I am only fully human when I'm helping somebody else. That I am only fully human when I am helping somebody else." So that's why I'm out here with you in the cold, watching you two try to get along. Because that's who I'm supposed to be. In this gospel that we read today, Jesus is calling and equipping 12 disciples. And the Gospel of Matthew names each and every disciple. It's very important for that gospel writer to say that Simon and Andrew, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas, Matthew the tax collector, Simon the Canaanean, Thaddeus, Judas Iscariot, James, son of Alphaeus. Every single name is spoken, and it's almost as if Matthew wants us to continue with names like Russell and Joni, Angela and John, Sally, Ted, and every single one of you. You see, in the gospel, when Jesus is calling these disciples by name, he's also calling me and he's calling you. And he gives us some very clear instructions, which to me are almost surprising. He says to the disciples that not only are they to go and tell people about him, which I think you and I get that part. We're supposed to share Jesus with people. We're supposed to share the news that Jesus loves them. We know that part. But the other part that Jesus instructs is very, very incredible. He says to the disciples, "I want you to go out and I want you to heal people. And I want you to cleanse them from unclean spirits. I give you authority from heaven." You see, from God's perspective, the world is like a huge harvest, and there's all these people that are lonely or suffering, and God sees all kinds of work that needs to be done. And you and me, Jesus is saying that we're on his team. And that he expects us to go to work for him. We have been given very specific instructions. And I don't know if you and I realize how much authority and power we've been given. Did you know that you can heal people? And I'm not talking about some miraculous stuff, although that'd be great, and I don't deny that that happens sometimes. But you can heal people just by listening. Just by being there. You can cast out unclean spirits just by requiring that someone be honest with you for the first time in their lives. You are agents of healing and goodness in this world. And it is not enough for us as disciples to just enjoy our lives. We are not fully human. We are not fully what God intends for us to be if we are not helping other people. Jesus did not tell the disciples to enjoy life and sit around. He said, "You need to get moving, because there's a lot of work to do, and my children are hurting, and I need you to be my hands and my feet in this world." And every single one of you, from the moment that you wake up until the moment you go to sleep, God has work for you to do. And you will be fulfilling who you truly are when you wake up in the morning and your first thought is not, how am I doing? How are my relationships? How's my this, my that, my how can I make my life better? But what if your first thought was, God, what can I do for you today? What can I do to help make this world a better place? I see your harvest. I see there's a lot of work to do. Today, moment to moment, show me what you need me to do. Because the path that God has for you is unique and amazing, but I can't tell you what it is. That's between you and God. But I agree with that elder when he told Colin that we are not fully human until we put God's will in front of our own will. That is the ultimate question, isn't it? In our lives, are we going to say to God, thy will be done? Or is God going to say to us, thy will be done? Because I'll tell you, my will and my way of making myself happy doesn't really work anyway. So spending your life trying to fix your life, it just doesn't work. But spending your life as a disciple, spending your life with the knowledge that you have work to do for others, that your job is to help others, to pray for others, to listen to others, to give to others, well, that's when you find out who you really are. You were made for a purpose. You were named for a purpose. God has so much for us to do together. And we will never fully understand our capacity to be human until we begin every day by asking God, how can I serve you today? That, my friends, is the work of discipleship. Our work together. Amen.